You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au. We light our chalice today, thankful for the days that have been, even those days that have tried our souls. We light our chalice in hope for the days that shall be, even those that will demand of us the best that we have of faith and hope and courage. May our gratitude for the past and our hope for the future persist in us until we have become more attuned to the great spirit of all things, even in these days of winter, where great nature waits in patience for its blessed transformation into the new life of spring. Good morning and welcome to our service of worship. It is a service because it means to serve you, and it is worship because it means to serve you by raising to worth things that matter. My name is Rob McPherson, the minister of this church, and I welcome you here on behalf of generations of Unitarians who've worshipped in similar gatherings in South Australia since 1854. We are a spiritual community that encourages and supports all who come to find, to fashion, and most importantly, to follow their own spiritual path, any path that helps you see more clearly, love more abundantly, and work toward a better world for all. You're invited to kick on with us after the service for coffee, tea, conversation, and a rather special celebration today, featuring champagne, mimosas, orange juice, and cake. Let's join in singing our opening hymn, Enter, Rejoice, and Come In. Once upon a time, a long time ago, in faraway Greece, there lived a man named Theseus. He was a famous king and a military hero who founded the city of Athens, the birthplace of Western democratic civilization. Since he was a naval hero, after his death, the Athenians commemorated him by docking his famous ship in the port. This ship of Theseus stayed in the port a long, long time. It was built of 100 planks of a certain kind of wood. But as time passed, a few of the wooden planks started rotting away. This was a concern for the people of Athens, who wanted to honor the memory of their famous founder by preserving his ship as it was when he originally sailed it. Since Athens was a democracy, they approached the problem sensibly and formed an inclusive committee to discuss what should be done. One bright spark suggested replacing the rotten planks with new ones made from the same kind of wood. He was promptly shouted down. "If you replace Theseus's planks with new ones, it won't be the ship of Theseus anymore. We will have created a false copy of the ship and will dishonor the memory of our famous hero," many cried. "But if we do not renew the planks, the rot must continue and the ship must sink," said the bright spark. and that will more surely dishonor the legacy of our beloved forebear by having a ruined half-sunk ship as his memorial. Oh, all right, just a few planks then, the majority said. Not too many, just the ones that need replacing now, so the change won't be noticed, and we can still say to ourselves and others, this is the ship of Theseus. So they did. They replaced a few planks so you'd never know the difference. But there was this lingering sense that the ship wasn't quite what it used to be in the good old glory days. Still, over time, they learned to live with this nagging discomfort when they said, this is the ship of Theseus, when they knew it sort of was and sort of wasn't. But years passed, and time and tide being what they are, more planks rotted and had to be replaced. And the grove the original wood was taken from had been burnt out by a brush fire, so they had to use wood that was similar but not the same kind. And every time planks had to be replaced, the same committee meeting, which was now called Citizens for the Preservation of the Ship of Theseus, took place, and they wrung their hands and clutched their brows about how to preserve and memorialize their past. Some purists felt that it was all a lost cause since the first plank was replaced and decried the bad faith of the entire project. Some magical thinkers felt that as long as you had one plank, just even one single plank, from the original ship of Theseus, it was still the ship of Theseus by a kind of association. One day, years and years later, a clever wag named Socrates pointed out something they had not considered before. The planks of the ship don't matter. All matter decays and changes. Even the marble temples and stone hills of our beloved city erode over time. If new planks are added according to the same form or design of the ship remains buoyant and retains its essence. The committee scratched their brows and thought of this. Where is this form or essence of the ship, Socrates? They cried, show us, let us see it, so we may know we are being true to the heritage of the ship. Oh, the form or essence of the ship is invisible, said Socrates. It can only be seen with the wise mind that has learned to look through changing appearances to the pure idea of Theseus's ship that can never die and which inspires us to keep remaking it over time in changing materials. Teach us, they said. Teach us to see this invisible world of forms that underlies the material changing world, they demanded. Oh, for that you have to learn philosophy, said Socrates. That will take your total focus for many years. You will have to quit your phony baloney jobs and trinket shops and go on the Athenian public dole of bread and fish and olives so that you can free yourself from your attachment to material things. Then you might one day perceive the eternal and unchanging essences that underlie the ever-changing appearances of the material world. Well, the committee thought about this for a while, and they conferred. Then they spoke. Kill him, they said. Oh, arrest him and try him first, of course. You know, go through the motions, but then, you know, shut him up. And the rest of the story is hemlock and history. The ship of Theseus has, of course, long returned to its constituent atoms, as we all and everything must. Though not through a lack of well-intentioned people trying to keep it together, trying to preserve a once proud legacy of their brief but vital shining moment in history. The essence of the ship of Theseus does live on, as the story I just told you, lives on in your mind, embodying a classic paradox about change and identity. In the face of inevitable natural change, the citizens of Athens kept asking, at what point is it no longer the same ship? When you change one plank? What about when you change 51 out of 100, so that most of the planks are different? What about when the last original plank has to be replaced? Is that then no longer the same ship of Theseus? How about if we add video and a disabled toilet? Just because there can be no objective correct answer does not make the question meaningless. A better question might have been, what do we mean by sameness? Maybe our idea of sameness is meaningless. A Buddhist would certainly say so. Nothing possesses inherent existence is, I think, the phrase from the Dhammapada. Everything is in flux, in a perpetual state of change. But you don't need to be a Buddhist, or you don't need to be a Christian. You don't need to be in anything. In order to take comfort from the felt truth of the immortal words of this Jewish prophet on the ever-changing nature of things. It's read by Peter Whittem.
I'm reading from the King James Version of the Bible. To everything there is a season, and a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, and a time to pluck up that which is planted. A time to kill, and a time to heal. A time to break down, and a time to build up. A time to weep, and a time to laugh. A time to mourn, and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to get, and a time to lose. A time to keep, and a time to cast away. A time to rend, and a time to sow. A time to keep silence, and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate, a time of war and a time of peace.
Thank you, Peter. So, each thing has its season. Last week we addressed matters cosmic, the big universal conditions we're all a part of, and as it turns out, a rather unique and special part of. Despite appearances, our universe is not a big room full of a bunch of objects. It's actually one giant process composed of jillions of sub-processes of the interactions of energy and matter. Even things we think of as solid are, in fact, processes composed of particles interacting with other particles and forces. We ourselves are bound up intimately in this cosmic scheme, which is characterized by constant transformation, even if that transformation is slow or far away or so tiny in scale that we can barely observe it. Since all forms are undergoing this constant state of change every millisecond, there can be no sameness, no identity that is inherent or permanent in anything. So identity, unchanging sameness, has no meaning without a human observer. These processes we call things, like ships and even atoms that make them up, have attributes that we can observe and measure. And the observer selects those attributes that serve their purpose, whatever that might be. And these selected attributes become the basis for the identity the observer assigns. And of course, when they change, the observer can change his notion of the identity. So sameness, identity, is an arbitrary and a purely human construct. Up till now, I bet you've been hearing all this about the ship of Theseus as a purely academic paradox, kind of mental masturbation, and thus rather irrelevant to your lived life. Until you reflect that the story of the ship of Theseus is not about boats or numbers of planks. It's really about us, the observers. Because we human observers change too, and so our observations change, and our notion of what constitutes for us the identity of things, even those things we most treasure. By the time about 7 years elapses, every cell in your body will have died and been replaced by new cells built from food, water, and air. You literally, materially, are not the same person you were. I am and am not this child. I am and am not that child. Nor can all the thoughts in my head be the same as they were even 7 years ago when I started this ministry. How could they be after everything that passes through the mind over 7 years? And yet, I feel a continuity I call identity. So where lies this personal identity, our essential self? In the past? In the present? But oops, the present moment's now past. Kind of how it works. Maybe the past can't really exist at all. But it's only stories like the ship of Theseus we keep rewriting, reconstructing from moment to moment. It would be fair to say we human beings are a little conflicted about the idea of change itself. We may understand what Ecclesiastes says, that all things come and go in their season, but it is hard to properly feel it. For our reflex is mostly to resist life's transience with every fiber of our being. We both accept change as an idea and hate it when it applies to our felt experience. The feeling called nostalgia is, I'm sure, familiar to you. Things ain't what they used to be in my day are probably the saddest words I hear regularly in my ministry. Even when we see that things need to move on, we can't bear to let go of what was in order to let what we know needs to be come into being. Why is that? Well, simply, on an emotional level, who likes to grieve? We don't want to grieve. In grieving, be reminded of the relentless passage of our own time and that of those people and things we cherish. To love anything is to be fated to grieve it. Just as with our changing human bodies, minds, and environment, our human institutions are subject to and resist change, loss, and grief. And if you smell me getting close to home about change and identity as it relates to our church institution, well done. You have been paying attention. We have two basic urges in us that are always in tension. Intention. We have the urge to create and the urge to institutionalize what's created. The creative urge in us is the freedom to respond to a changing world by envisioning what is not yet, but we imagine up here in our minds and can be. So maybe Socrates was right. The urge to institutionalize responds to any successful new creation by trying to affix it, to make that new good thing the norm forever. It is our human tragedy that absolutely pure preservation of anything like the ship of Theseus is simply not possible. So it's a good thing, maybe, that nature and not humans or institutions are in charge of unfolding life, the universe, and everything. Otherwise, we would never have evolved from lower forms of life. No, no, don't leave the trees for the grassy savannas. We're fine here in the trees. You don't know what's out there. It's a good thing the universe is running this big transformation project, or the Big Bang might have been, well, less of a bang, more of a big, longing, unfulfilled throb. Consider the winter season of death and decay that we are now in. The leaves fall and rot and enrich the soil, and thus become part of the blossoms that come again in spring. No mud, no lotus, as I believe the Buddhists say. How crucial is dying to unfolding life itself? In this, as in so many things, how little faith we have in life. How little faith we have. This lovely hymn expresses a deep faith in the natural forces of change we know happen all around us, and it asks us to awaken our faith that change threatens us ultimately not at all. Please stand as you're able. It's probably important for us to remember that institutional change doesn't erase the past like chalk from a chalkboard. Time past is indeed contained in time present, even for the ship of Theseus or for this church, which still exists today as a story. Think about it. Our church's past has led to a present where we can flourish well enough to be able to create a way forward. But all things have to die in order for new life to unfold. Think about this as we farewell our much beloved organist who retires from our service today, and with him, probably the retiring of organ music as a fixed and unchanging plank on our little ship. Is spiritual buoyancy still possible with new music, new planks? Of course it is. But loss aversion is a melancholy law of human psychology. It is a psychological rule that the fear of loss will always outweigh the promise of gain. But when the fear of loss overwhelms us and an institution preserving itself and its norms becomes the most important thing, and its past identity is preferenced above spiritual buoyancy in the present, well, there is a churchy word for what that leads to. Idolatry, where the institution itself and its accustomed trappings becomes the highest good. Ironically, idolatry in religion is all too common and provides ready ammunition for those who would criticize the entire project of religion. Examples abound. Charismatic preachers whose personal aggrandizement becomes more important than the spirit that called them to preaching. That's idolatry. Magical sacraments like the Catholic confession that are known to enable harm yet remain non-negotiable. That's idolatry. Buildings that become venerated for their past but do not serve the present people present in them. That's idolatry. Theologies that demand we discriminate, exclude, or kill non-believers. That's idolatry. These various kinds of idolatry are alive in religion today. In attempting to venerate the past and avoid loss and grief, idolatry can creep in all too easily, even in smart churches like this one. The ship of Theseus became, for the citizens of ancient Athens, an idol. It took a new and deeper wisdom about the impermanence of all things to truly preserve the timeless essence of that ship, for that essence is here with us now, today. May we be alive to the deeper wisdom of that ancient and insoluble problem, and may we go forward in this church as free of fear as we are free of idols, alive instead to the living essence that lies beyond our building, beyond its trappings, and beyond our custom. Call it what you will, beauty, truth, goodness, the living essence that has not and cannot die, the essence that drew us here and will draw so many others in the time to come. Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitariansa@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.